This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Looking back, going along the ocean and looking back and seeing hundreds and hundreds of people and how magnificent that was.
I had no concept really what this whole race thing was about.
I feel like a stranger on a strange planet most of the time.
Actually, I didn't have any memories until my father did his sex change.
Sometimes I like go, you know, I hope this trip is over fast, you know, I want to go home. You know, I want to be with God.
I cannot figure out why we do things the way we do them. What we're about.
That's why I came to California.
Welcome to our studio in Sebastopol, California. Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. This time, the theme of the show is the show itself. This is program number 20. We're getting set to launch into the fall. So we're just taking a deep breath and looking back, and then looking ahead to see what's going to be on the map and off the map and behind the map in the months ahead.
Today we're going to visit some old friends again, and these aren't necessarily our favorite trips, but they're our shortest trips, snapshots here, there.
If this is your first listen to us, this show is about journeys. The trip you took that's really memorable, the trip you haven't really yet come back from.
You know, there's a show on public radio called The Savvy Traveler, and this is an excellent show. We, however, make no pretense whatever of being savvy. Our most significant trips have begun in pure ignorance, and we invite you to follow that tradition.
Here are some stories about the surprise of the familiar and the unfamiliar.
So we had a couple of days in Seattle, and I went out for a walk, and it turned out that if I came out my aunt's front door and turned to the right and walked, you would come to a corner where you could turn to the right and keep walking. And then you would come to another corner and you could turn to the right and keep walking. And then you could repeat this and you would be right back where you started from. They had laid this world out in neat little grids and streets that were straight and blocks that you could actually walk around. Whereas it's hard to describe the shock that was to me. Because the world I had known was roads that developed from paths that meandered the way the land meandered, or the way the carabaos found the easiest way to get down to the stream, and that would turn into a path, and that would someday turn into a road if a city grew up in that area. And there was never a sense that if you kept walking that way, you would eventually come back here. If you followed a path out and you wanted to go back to where you started, the only way to do that was to turn around and retrace your steps. I don't know why that struck me as quite a metaphor for the difference, but it was.
Oh, I remember when I first went to England, I'd never seen what they called it. Cash point card, which you call an ATM card. Never seen an ATM before. So I see this guy walk up to the ATM machine, which they call the cash point, and he inserts his card, punches a number, and gets money out. I said, holy God, what is good? These people are so rich that they have money on the roads. You just put a card in and you get money out. My God, I need that. What kind of card is that? I need that thing. So I'm looking, I don't know. I go to the ATM. It happened to be one of a bank in England called Lloyds Bank. So I look for the Lloyds itself, and I go in there. I go to the teller, and I said, you know the machine outside where people put something in and get money out? She says, yeah, cash. I said, yeah. Can I have a card for that machine, please? I need some money. And she said, do you have an account here? I said, no, I don't have an account, but I want that card. I want money. I saw somebody get money out. And she said, well, you see, you really have to have an account with money. Then we issue a card. It takes a week or two for you to... I said, oh, so you mean the person has an account and he has money in the account? And she said, yes. And again, I felt really like, you know, Martin, you've done it again. And I walk out into the sunshine and I try to look good and respectable, and then I walk away. I said, oh, Martin, it's a good thing nobody knows about that one, just you.
But the baby was born just about midnight that night, full moon. It was a great birth. It was a very awake moment. My son was there. Her dad was there. The midwife, my favorite midwife, was there. The moon came in the window. And I just worked, like, really hard. And then I got this baby. It was really, it was lovely. It was an... Well, it was lovely. I mean, that's a good word for it. But it was so clear. I mean, because it wasn't uncomplicated. There were some minor problems, but not enough to get me out of a birthing room into a delivery room. And I think it's the smartest I've ever been in terms of being a whole human being with a full intelligence in every cell of your body, toenails included. I think that's the smartest I've ever been. Just that hour or whatever of pushing and being very clear about what it was all about. That was great. That was great. It was so great, I vowed never to do it again.
We were talking with Steve Willite, Martin Fousey, and J.C. Todd. And here are a couple of stories about trips that don't get very far.
Well, didn't you hear me?
I was asleep.
I was yelling my head off. I'd like to die up there.
Well, you should have waked me up. I'd have got the cat out of the attic.
Well, you were asleep.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I didn't know. The cat's up in the attic, and I get the ladder and heave myself up there. Only it's the short ladder, and I can't get back down. I was there for 3 hours, damn it.
I was asleep.
I yelled and screamed. Didn't you see the note?
I didn't know what it meant.
It said, I'm in the attic, I can't get out. What else would it mean?
It's on the cat's collar.
I figured you'd see the cat, so I put the note on its collar and threw it down out of the attic.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. The damn thing climbed onto my face, woke me up.
I just about died up there.
Well, I was asleep. How am I supposed to hear her if I'm asleep? She's telling me, you look tired, take a nap. Then what are you doing asleep? You can't win.
So the cat wakes him up. He reads, I'm in the attic, and he says, well, now you're out, and throws the cat down and goes back to sleep. Nobody will ever believe that one.
Is that all they can put on the news?
Oh, the killing.
You know what? They try to instill fear. Adrenaline, that makes us buy stuff.
They used to say, nothing to fear but fear itself. And now they give us all these options.
Scared to go out of your house.
Well, they do it so you'll stay home. Watch TV.
Yeah, so what do you think about the vacation?
Well, we're not about to reconsider our plans,
no,
that's what you mean.
No, I just want to know how you felt.
If we're going to be ruled by fear, then we might as well just croak.
Although... I wonder about overseas.
Paris.
Wow, Paris. Yeah, Paris is very cheap right now.
How can you claim to be American if you've never been to Paris?
Yeah, but it kind of worries me. There's a lot of security. I'm not worried about security. I'm just concerned.
Oh, it's cutting down on tourism.
I mean, if you're the only American tourist.
Stick out like a sore thumb.
Let's see what else is on.
Well, we could see America first. Forget the rest of the world. See how they like that.
It feels more dangerous here. Nobody cares about what happens overseas. I mean, people overseas care about what happens overseas, but regular people don't.
Well, we wouldn't have to fly.
Well, then the airlines go bust.
We could drive.
Funnel more money into countries that hate our guts.
How about train or bus?
Well, who do we know that travels like that?
Then let's just stay home.
Stay home? On our vacation?
Well, but... Go out and see stuff. There's so much right here that we never see.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, see what's on now.
Was that the news or the entertainment?
Criticize the media, and here we sit watching it.
Let's get out of the house. Do something right now, tonight.
Yeah, the suburbs. Like a life sentence with a 30-year mortgage. And where to?
A movie?
Probably nothing I want to see. Bunch of gum-popping kids.
A theater.
That's such a hassle. Have to dress up.
Oh, hey, here's a wild idea. Baseball game.
How can you tell who you're going to sit next to? How about someplace for music?
Well, they put these places where it's not safe to go.
Something at the college?
Yeah, still have to drive there. Bump somebody's fender, they pull a gun.
Well, I'd just like to see some people.
We're having the Johnsons over on Friday.
I mean real people.
That's what talk shows are for.
There's too much traffic.
Too many people.
Too many kinds of people.
Keep an eye on the mailman.
Boil the mail.
Well, how about I rent a video?
A travelogue. Paris!
No, I'd have to drive. See what's on now. Well, that's not so bad. It's overseas.
Is the back door locked?
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Well, I guess in some ways it's true we're flaming radicals, or at least we're gently simmering ones. And you could say that telling stories is not a card-carrying political act, that this is just kind of dancing around the edges. But first of all, I think dancing is a good idea. And secondly, I would say a good story spun, whether it's fact or fiction, it's like water. It pours out like water. And it's not for nothing that they call water the universal solvent. You know, you walk deep into a cave and, good Lord, look what the water did. Here are all of these pillars that are rising up from the floor, the little dissolved minerals, drop by drop by drop, and then this hanging curtain of things that came down from the ceiling. Oh, what time can do.
So even if we seem to be dripping at times, we are building something.
Next time somebody calls you a drip, remember that.
And that even includes stories by people who are far from being wise. My grandmother was not one of my favorite people, and she was definitely not one of those legendary grandmothers of infinite wisdom and love. She was a very hard, dry German farm woman. But she did nevertheless introduce me to the art of people watching. We would drive in from the farm on Saturday mornings and park on the town square in Glenwood, Iowa. And after she'd done her shopping and was waiting very impatiently for my grandfather to do whatever it was that grandfathers did on Saturday morning, we'd sit in the pickup truck and watch the people. You were alone all week on the farm, listening to the radio, soap operas and the Lone Ranger and the Farm and Market Report. And then on Saturday you came to town and saw human beings. This was extremely boring to me. She would see someone passing and launch into speculation about that person's identity, family history, health, debt, morals. Look at that dress on that woman. Now, he looks like Buffington's son. Was that? Yeah, he got in trouble there. And on and on and on and on, as if I cared. But somehow that stuck, and I find I have continued the tradition over many years, earning my living telling lies about people, or call them speculations. And that's what we continue to do. We're trying to present portraits here of people, often in their own words, but there really are interpretations of these people, exactly the same as my grandmother did. Now, somehow, sometimes we have to admit, there comes a point in just living life when the incredible richness of human beings and the fact you can find joy and beauty in even the most twisted human being, and a sense that our deepest mission is to really give a sense of the value of every story we tell and every person we touch. Sometimes it just gets to you and you just forget that, and we just like to crack heads. So,
all right. Give us advance forgiveness, absolve us for what we're about to do here, which is a very unbalanced partisan response to homeland security.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. Let's get out more.
Veal Parmesan.
Oh, happy anniversary, hon.
More wine?
It's great.
Hey, when we get home, you have anything you need to do?
No, not really.
I really miss the kids, and then I think, yeah, but we've got the whole evening.
Oh, yeah.
Could we get to bed early tonight? It's been a while. Mm-hmm. Celebrate?
Oh, we're celebrating.
I mean, close. I mean, what hasn't been happening very often. I mean, I know there's been a lot of stress.
A lot of stress. I mean, everything's different. The world.
A lot's happened.
Everything is different.
What do you mean?
Well, read the papers. We thought the world was a great place. Everybody loves us. We're totally safe.
I never thought that. Nobody ever thought that.
Well, but it was the general consensus. And then this happens, and everybody agrees. Things will never be the same.
Meaning we don't go to bed together?
Well, it just doesn't seem appropriate to say, well, hey, business as usual, ignore reality, party on.
Well, I'm not sure that I feel that making love with your husband is quite in the category of party on.
What about 9/11?
Walt, 9/11 was on 9/11. That was a long time ago.
This is going to go on for years, decades. We have to change our way of life totally if we want to preserve it.
Well, maybe we shouldn't have come out to dinner.
No, I'm not saying lower living standards. We have to demonstrate what freedom can achieve. And so in my view, the best thing we can do for world hunger is, well, eat.
Walt, I don't want to involve the UN in the issue of going to bed together.
I just don't see this as an appropriate time.
Well, when would be the appropriate time?
I think when we've wiped out evil.
But don't you think the president and first lady sometimes, if they ever have some free time?
That's kind of disrespectful. Could we have some more wine? Look, I'm for enjoying life, but there have to be some restraints.
Well, there must be some virtue in not being so restrained. I mean, now we're going to drill in the Arctic. We're getting rid of the ABM treaty. We're accepting salmonella as a natural function of meat. We're unleashing the FBI. We're bombing everybody. Is that restraint?
And what do you think while we're up in the bedroom romping around, what are the terrorists doing with that time?
What are they doing with the time you're watching football?
How about some dessert?
Patty, I'm tired. All my life, be engaged, save the whales, and I'm really tired. I want Daddy to come in and say, okay, kids, you've had your fun, but we'll take charge from here. I'm tired. I want somebody to tuck me in and say, that's okay.
You're under stress. We can just snuggle and get some sleep.
There's a lot at stake here, you know. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Oh, I remember that from school.
That was a very special trip. We went to Hollywood, and I had learned the first few paragraphs by heart of Alice in Wonderland, and I was reciting them on the corner of Hollywood and Vine to anyone who would listen. Well, soon there was a big crowd, and my mother and my grandmother could not find me, and they were going crazy. And at one point, and I'm just, you know, in my glory, I was 4 and a half, and I felt this arm come reaching in through the crowd and just yanked me out of there, and I got a big spanking. I didn't do that again.
When I was a little kid, we took some road trips, but they were very limited in extent. However, just driving around locally was an adventure often. Like, for example, getting the car started. It wasn't a point of contention, it was just a nexus around which rationality intersects under pressure of circumstance with extra-rational cognitive structures and practices. For example, we had this very old Willys Jeep that was in very poor repair. And when it drove down the street, a blue cloud, one of those opaque clouds where the exhaust is clearly very broken, would come out the back. This was about 1958 when I was 4 years old. And we had it very briefly because it died. It finally blew a head gasket or something dropped the, you know, crankcase on the ground. But we would get these cars that had, you know, 350,000 miles. We would just drive them until they would die. So sometimes getting the car to start was a problem, depending on which car it was. This one, Willys, especially, it was pretty cold when we had that vehicle. And it was sort of in the winter, and we would do this praying thing. We would pray for it to start. So that was very adventurous to us as primarily rational children to witness and participate in a kind of a ritual, a rite, something that was clearly aimed at transcending the mundane and kind of doing something else. And it was clearly believed to be efficacious, the presumption, the reigning presumption was this was going to actually work. And we were, the kids would say, would kind of doven, move forward, back and forward from the waist, sitting in the car that we're hoping to start, saying, pray, pray, pray. That was the chant.
Now, the longest trip I took was to California by Greyhound bus when I was 4 and a half. And I get car sick very easily. And my mother bought my brother a special cowboy hat, and all the way home on the bus, she would change the plastic bags over the cowboy hat, and she kept looking at me and saying, "Don't you ever tell your brother that you did this." I didn't tell my brother.
I can remember one time my father it was just me and my father on a trip, and I had to go to the bathroom, and we were in Natural Bridge, Virginia. And my father took me to the ladies' room and sent me inside, and I went in, and there was a black lady there, and she looked at me and she said, "Well, you must be in the wrong place." And it turned out that the restrooms were segregated in Natural Bridge, Virginia, and my father had sent me into the colored restroom instead of the white restroom. And so the lady brought me out and said, "Well, you sent her to the wrong restroom." And my father looked at her and said, "Well, did she pee?" And and the lady said, "Well, no." And my father said, "Well, then can you take her back inside? And then when she's finished, then she can come back out." I've always remembered that. With a certain amount of embarrassment.
We were talking with Diana Pepitone, Mark Cello, and Sarah Savitz. And one more story. The first time I knew my parents loved me, I was very tiny. We were going somewhere in the car. I was in the back seat, and my brother shut the door, but it didn't latch. And my dad started the car and started off, and my mom said, "Oh, we've got a surprise." And that's when I leaned on the door and fell out. I don't remember landing or pain, just the car rolling off down the street and me thinking, "What's the surprise? My brothers are gonna get the surprise." And the car stopped, and both doors flew open like beetle wings, and these two frantic angels came sailing toward me, and I was so happy. And then, of course, I thought, "Well, I guess I'm supposed to cry." So I did. I don't remember what was the surprise.
"It's okay."
"Oh, honey, now this is going to hurt a little while I clean it."
"Just an accident. Wasn't your fault."
"Or maybe. I was so scared."
Life. Maybe life. Life was one hell of a big surprise.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. And in the coming weeks, well, let's see, over the next weeks we are going
to be... Well, we interviewed Matthew Fox, the controversial theologian of creation spirituality, and we talked with a lot of people from other countries, from Mexico, Romania,
Siberia, yes, including a wonderful story about a grief-stricken family burying the wrong grandmother.
You've got to listen to find out.
And dramatic storytelling about two elderly women making their first trip to the Burger King.
Oh, hey, and we're going to be producing a series about people's experiences on Mount Shasta. So if you've been there and you have stories to tell, which you probably do, visit our website at www.independenteye.org and send us an email that tells us about it.
We're also working on some programs around a myth, The Descent of Inanna. It's about an underworld journey of bottoming out and a resurrection. If that strikes sparks in your own life, if you can relate to coming through the dark, we'd like to hear about it.
And when we get to the holiday season, we're celebrating what we feel is sacred to people of any faith, nativity, the birth of a child. We'll have women's stories of childbirth.
Next week, a young Mexican-American poet activist journeys from his past to his future, and an Iowa teenager discovers true love.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is supported in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and by listeners, which can include you if you go online and join the Hitchhikers Guild, www.independenteye.org, where we can also sell you CDs of the shows and anthologies of the most memorable pieces and interviews.
If you like the show and would like to see it continue, send us an email and also call or email your local station. They want to know you're listening.
Till next time, peace. And joy.
Well, I did go down the aisle once. I was late. And I should have just probably not gone.
30 years we had been apart and on our different journeys. And now we're on our journey together.
It's been a very interesting kind of journey to that. Traveling further and further towards who we are.